The key is reality. This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing, University of Philosophy, here in Campo, California, with Absolute Philosopher. The key is reality. Now, the use of the term key is a misnomer most of the time. It misleads people, thinking that there is one little thing that's going to open up the door to whatever it is you're going to open the door to, one schlüssel. And it doesn't quite work that way. It is maybe an important aspect of it, but the key to reality is the same thing which is the key to everything else. It is thinking about it, putting a cause in motion about it, and then demonstrating it. Demonstrating it to how? By revealing it. So, how do we reveal our reality? Where is our reality? What is our reality? Is there a reality at all? And does it matter whether there's reality at all or not? These are the type of questions a philosopher would ask. And he would not care whether he got an answer or not either. Because a philosopher is just to think about something, not to be possessed by it, not to feel that he has to come to conclusions and answer things. I was reading in the Discover magazine, the recent copy. They had the year end of the great profound findings that they had made during the year. And in there, it said, under six different cases, that what the people were doing was finding a solution and which was contrary to what Einstein found, contrary to what Edison found in the light system, contrary to the fabric of the universe concept, contrary to the Big Bang theory concept, contrary to all of these things, and that these people proved that they were contrary. They didn't prove that the theory was wrong. They merely thought, it can't be so. It's too cut and dried. It's too well laid out. It's too well organized. That, of course, is what makes it a good theory. But the problem that these people have, and perhaps that's what makes a scientist, is that they go in looking to disprove something. The real scientist, I would imagine, is the one who goes in looking to prove something, looking to find where life began. And they are doing that, to find where the genes and chromosomes and DNA and all these things come from and how they work. And they're doing a study now on dogs in Massachusetts. It's $50 million study into animals and their chromosomes and their genes and stuff like DNA. And the first one they're doing is with a bulldog. And they want to prove that the bulldog's genes and chromosomes are close to mankind's. And that the reason mankind finds animals such a salubrious pet to have, so comfortable to have, so enjoyable to have, is that their genes and chromosomes are so close together. Now, that may be and it may not. We'll see as the study goes on. But the reality of anything is quite different from the expression of anything. The reality of all is a concept. And a concept is really quite uninteresting. If we work on the concepts of life, we'll find them exceedingly uninteresting. They lead nowhere. They accomplish nothing. They just point out, this is a fact. Like, as I walk the path each morning, I look up in the sky and I see the Big Dipper. And the Big Dipper is making its tour around the heavens. It's going from the bottom to the side to the top. Now it's up near the top. Now it's going to go around the other side and come down around here. But always circling the North Star. And of course, I know where the North Star is because it's just about a mile or so to the right of the UFO station we have out here. And but what is the reality? You see, to know the North Star is there, to know the Big Dipper is there, to know that they the Big Dipper circles around the North Star, and to know that it does it every so many days, to know that the full moon comes up and wanes according to a given process and program, what reality do you see in that? Well, I guess we shouldn't call something like that reality. That's just an exercise in what the Big Dipper does and how the skyscape moves and how we have learned to read it and tell where things are. Just imagine. You think Columbus was so wonderful. Was he in 1492 discovered the ocean blue, across the ocean blue, and found America, which he didn't do. He found it a little later. But anyhow, he came to America. Now, I say Columbus was the most amazing man because he was able to look up at the stars and follow his way across the ocean to a place he didn't know existed. He was looking for something entirely different. He was looking for, you know, the way to go around the world, yeah. And so, but he found this place, and now, see, the reality of what he was doing was totally different. He looked at the North Star as his polar star, as a way to move here, and he got here pretty nicely down in the Caribbean. But we know about him, and we know about Magellan, we know about Ponce de Leon, we know about many of these other very wonderful, and Cortez, these other wonderful early explorers, because they made it. Now, just think, the battle was on to find new countries and to find gold and to find all these things. How many didn't make it? We never heard about. They went down to the bottom. They joined Davy Jones and his party. And they just had a wonderful time, too. But they all had to use the North Star as their focus, to allow them to canvas the globe. And they all had to feel that the globe was round, that they weren't going to go off the edge of the earth as they went to the horizon in the ocean, you know, boom, bum, dropping down into space. They had to know these things. Now, what's the reality of what they knew? The reality of what they knew was a pure concept. It is true that early man drew maps of the world reasonably well, and the maps of the world described the various planets, the various continents, and told approximately where they were, and they were there, and the people finally got there. But that was just a concept. The concept that they were there. But someone had to believe in that concept to make it a reality, to make it something that was fulfilled for them. And so the early explorers did that. And of course, many other areas too. But the early explorers did that. In the north, the Vikings, one of the early Vikings, he was out fishing, and he went from Scandinavia, to Iceland, to Greenland, to the other, the coast, Nova Scotia, and Newfoundland, and he came all the way over to America, and he caught his fish, and then he turned around without even landing. Turned around and went back home. Well, he had a nice load of fish and everything, but he went right back home. His son later came and found that part of America. But he found it, and he had a group of people living there. And it was quite an interesting story, too. But they had just only a concept. They had no reality maps, nothing that anyone could put their finger on. Because these people, it was bad enough they were trying to follow the star and go where they were, but then to look at an island, they think, or a piece of land, and not know whether it's hostile or not, and then come back to their homes. But what is reality? Reality is when we feel pleased with ourselves. Reality is when we feel that we are at home with an idea. Now, are you at home with the idea of family? Well, if you're at home with the idea of the family, then that's a reality for you. If you are at home with the idea of relationships, then that's a reality for you. If you are at home with the idea of being a business person, then that's a reality for you. A reality in the relative level is on these various points. But let's look for a minute at reality in absolute, since the absolute philosopher is supposed to be sharing some ideas there. What is reality in the absolute? Reality in the absolute is nothing. Reality in the absolute is everything. Reality in the absolute is whatever it is that you are conscious of, and you're not conscious of anything. And you're not conscious of anything. You are aware of all, and yet you're unaware of all. And the moment you place your consciousness on a particular awareness, then you are no longer aware of the all, and then you are no longer in reality. You step into the world of illusion when you step into the world of uniqueness or individual expression. And this is quite interesting. Do you want to have that key to reality? Can you afford to have it? As I say so often to you, would you like to have a spiritual healing? And in a spiritual healing, we described it as when you have a spiritual healing, you never remember that you had an illness. The doctors don't remember you ever being in the hospital. There's no records of you. Your parents, families, friends, and whoever is in your world, they don't know that you were ill because it has, like, it was never happened. And, of course, that's what spiritual healing is. That which is that is a negative, you might say, never happened. And in truth, all of the things that we call negative in our human world have never happened. We have just thought about them and given them life and given them substance, but they really never happened. Think about it. When you were a kid, surely you had a lot of very tragic experiences in your life. You fell down and broke your leg, maybe, and scratched yourself, and you may have had some childhood disease. You may have had your mother or father in a tough situation. But stop and think now. All day long, are you dwelling upon that?
No.
You don't even remember that. You don't even remember the negative things that happened to you because you had a quasi spiritual healing in that area. However, you can go into your file cabinet and pull out those experiences if you want, but you won't really pull out those experiences. What you'll pull out are the comments that other people made about it at the time. Oh, you really hurt yourself. You really fell down good. You really, and you know, here, come let Aunt Gussie kiss it for you and make it all well. And nobody else cares about you, but Aunt Gussie does. And nobody else wants to see you and you know, give you the positive or negative feed. And the negative feedback is because they want to build up a relationship with you, having you need them, you know. So we don't remember those things. We don't. If we remember them, we don't remember them correctly, because they're all an illusion. So if we can dispatch the past that easily, so we don't remember the negative things that happened to us, think how we could dispatch other things if we would stop remembering them. If we'd stop concentrating on them, stop talking about them. We must know our history. We must know our heritage. We must know this. You know, the United States has so many nice things to offer to the world, I think. And people come to the United States because they like what it has to offer. And the first thing they do is to try to retain their natural heritage. They want to retain their Asiatic background. They want to live in an Asiatic community, or a German community, a Swiss community, an Italian community, whatever it may be, you know, an African community. And they want to live in these communities because it gives them a feeling of home, you know. And so it's a long time before they come out of that. And when they come out of that, if their parents hadn't been pushing them and saying, you're Italian now, remember that, you know, you're Italian, and Italians are this way, you know. If they had just said, you're an American. You're an American, which includes being harmonious with all the world, which includes having this, that, and the other thing, you know. But no, that's not done in many homes. And because that's not done, then there is a divisiveness, a disparity in our national culture. And if people coming to this country would learn to speak English instead of speaking German, French, Italian, Spanish, or whatever, they'd be much happier because the language here is that. Now, we were in Africa, and we were in the darkest Africa because we were among the natives who were speaking dialect. And they just rattled on in dialect with a fearful interest in it. And I said to my host, I said, may I make a suggestion? I'd like to have you speak so I can understand it in English, because I certainly don't understand dialect. Okay, yeah, no problem, we'll speak English. And zip, right back into dialect to go. And so I said to them another time, I said, you're being very discourteous. I said, I'd like to be part of your conversation if you want me, but I can't if you're not going to speak English. Oh, we'll speak, oh yeah, I forget, we'll speak English. You know. But you see, it's such a, they've been trained from childhood up to use the dialect. They have been trained in their various communities, and various communities, each has its own dialect. And each has its own charisma and its own desire to be unique. And they don't want togetherness. And because they don't want togetherness, now, who in that area would be together? Who in any area is together? Who in America? Who in Africa? Who is together? The children. The children do not hold divisiveness among themselves. They do not say, you're an Italian, I don't want to talk to you. You know, you're an American, I don't want to talk to you. The children like everybody. And everybody's welcome to come and play with children, even if they don't understand their language. They will communicate because children's language is universal. Maybe that's where we should get the universal language from, the children. But that's beautiful. Now, what is the reality of that thing? The reality is that we ourselves have chased ourselves away from reality from day one, and we will continue doing that because we find it a certain desirable thing to be exclusive. I am a Jew. I am Italian. I am a Frenchman, you know. And then I speak my French tongue in such a beautiful way. People say, oh, isn't that charming, you know. I have my dialect, and people say, isn't that charming? Don't ever lose it. And you know why they say don't lose it? Because they're superior to you. Because you're a fraud. You're a fraud when you go someplace and you pick up the dialect and you live it, you know. Be yourself at all times. And who is yourself? Are you an American? Then speak English. Are you an Italian? Then speak English. No, I mean, are you living in Italy? Then speak Italian, right? Mm-hmm. Wherever you are. Now, we take that a step further from our philosophical point of view. If you are a Catholic, be a good one. Don't say, I like this from there and that from there and this from there. Like all the Catholic teachings. And live them with all your heart, all your soul, and all your being. If you like being a Mormon or a Jew or Islamic or whatever, Protestant of any kind, be it and live it. And don't go around saying that you're ashamed of being a Catholic or ashamed of being a Protestant. Because if you are ashamed, you're the one who's making yourself ashamed. Because in every faith, in every religion is a great deal of good. And the best thing in every religion is a word starting out with P. Can you tell me what it is? Ending with E.
Peace.
Huh?
Peace.
People.
That's a good one.
The best thing in any religion is the people. And the people, if you took their religion away from them, they would all be one. The religion divides them because they feel that that's their key to get into heaven. And they need that key. And the key is an exclusivity that moves them right out of being a universal being. And when they lose the key, then they have compassion, they have gentleness, they have love for themselves and everyone in their world. Yes. It's something, really. When we think about reality, what are we thinking about? Are we thinking about, it's really cold outside? Or are we thinking, is that really your dad? He's such a good-looking boy. It didn't rub off on you. Or some other silly remark like that. But think about it. The key to reality is just to be yourself and have fun. Doing nothing more than that, nothing less. Just be yourself and have fun. Now, Ellen has been listening to a couple of these discs of our Christmas seminar, and she says, wow, the reception coming through on the speakers. Of course, it's a Bose speaker, but coming through is so beautiful, so powerful. She says, that's great, you know. And she said, you've got it for all these seminars. Wow. But you can only have an hour on a disc. And so if your lectures are 18 hours long from the Christmas seminar, then you got to have 18 tapes, 18 discs. And what were we at Monterey? We had a great deal more than that. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes it was even longer than an hour. And that would have to be divided up. Fortunately, I can look at the tapes in the properties aspect and tell if they are exceedingly longer than an hour. And then I know to make two of them right away. But this is fun. This is lots of fun. And you plan on doing what's lots of fun, and you're going to be a delightfully happy, fulfilled person. Because, if for no other reason, I love you, I love you, I love you.
I love you. I love you.